Chief, Jones and Keefe on WEEI.
2-2. Swung on and ripped deep into left field. It is back at the track, at the wall. Goodbye! Homer for Carlos Narvaez. El Capitan puts the Red Sox ahead 9-7.
Jones and Keefe live from day two, Patriots training camp here at Gillette Stadium. We are presented by McFarland Energy, the heating, cooling, and bioheat delivery pros that Eastern Mass and all of Cape Cod depend on at McFarlandEnergy.com. That was the Red Sox last night, Keefe. Wow. I mean,
that was insane.
You just said it's a roller coaster season. That was a roller coaster game last night. Wild game, much needed win last night. Narvaez had a brutal weekend. A brutal stretch, rather, in Philadelphia. Came through with a big swing last night. Red Sox were down 5-0. They felt dead, and they really, really significantly needed that game last night.
Yeah, I think it was the game of the year. I don't think it's hyperbole or recency bias. It was the game of the year. It was a wild game. I can't remember one where you're like, they're going to lose. Then you're like, oh, my God, they're actually going to win. Then no, they're going to lose. Oh, I think they're going to win. Oh, no, they are going to lose. And then they won. Like, that's what happened. Like, every time. So they're down early, and, you know, Schwarber and Harper, and they're just giving up home runs left and right. You're like, this game is over.
Schwarber,
they're about
to Harper go back to back.
Yeah.
Then there were a couple more home runs. So they're down 5-0. I was, like, ready to shut it off. I'm
yeah,
like,
five
they're nothing. Dead.
5-0's gross. And you're like, all right, well, there's still a lot of game left. But you're like, that's a rough go of it. And then the next thing you know, you get a grand slam, and you're like, oh, they're winning. But then as soon as Realmuto homered, you're like, I know it's tied, but it felt like the game was over. And then they go into extra innings.
No, 100%. They
It's over. Like, they were going to win.
Chapman's done. You're like, they're screwed.
And we can get into Cora's use of Chapman and everything else. That's a big part of this whole game. But once they tied the game with Chapman, it was so deflating.
It's over.
Yeah, that was me. That was me at home having
100%
a 100%
how I felt, yeah.
And then the next thing you know, they go into extra innings. We're all very well aware of what their record is in extra innings. It seems like they lose all of them. In fact, they have lost all the road games.
I was just going to say, on the road prior to last night, they had lost every extra inning game. Yep.
And then they take the lead, and you're like, all right, maybe they're going to win this game. And then bottom of the 10th, they give it right back. Kyle Schwarber comes up with a hit, and you're like, oh, they're going to for sure lose. And then the next thing you know, Narvaez, you heard Will Fleming's call of it, El Capitan with the home run. And even then, I was like, are they going to win? But like, Philly's up again, and Philly's got some dudes. I don't know about this.
I felt like Duran, his at-bat in the top of the 11th, I felt like they needed to push one more across to really feel good.
I kind of agree. And you're like, all right, you've already used Chapman and Whitlock, so I'm like, this extra inning thing could go real sideways fast.
So let's go back, though, because you mentioned this quick, and the Patriots are just starting up team stuff here, so we'll keep our eyes on that, like real team stuff, because we weren't seeing much there earlier.
No, it was a lot of on-air kind of stuff.
So anything here, May looking, who is that? That's not Diggs.
That might have been, was that a Booty?
That's Booty.
That's a Booty.
That's Booty.
That's a Booty.
Out to the left side of the formation.
We're a pro Booty show.
Well,
you should see my Instagram.
But no, I thought Cora going to Bernardino in the 11th probably was the right move. My guy Alcala didn't really look like he had it.
Well, that's all they had left.
He was uncorking 100, but he has no idea where it's going.
No,
I loved bringing in Chapman to face Schwarber. I wasn't
in
sure.
In the seventh. Like, we've seen Chapman a bunch in the eighth inning.
One run game, get him in there.
No, I have no problem with it. That was aggressive, and I think it showed you. Cora feels the same way about that game and these games as we do. We're like, these are desperate times, right? And it's funny because the other day he sort of mentioned Sanchez and Wheeler, you got to kind of tip your cap to him. It's like, all right, you can only tip your cap so many times. Like, you need to win these games, and he had an opportunity to do it, and he has an all-star closer, and I give Chapman a lot of credit, too. I don't think a lot of closers would even be interested. If they're like, hey, get warmed up. I'd be like, dude, it's the seventh. I'm not going in.
Dude, the guy last year, and I said this, and I was wrong. I'm like, I think I'd rather have Kenley Jansen than Aroldis Chapman.
No way.
Wrong.
Right.
Jansen wouldn't do that.
No.
Jansen?
No.
Jansen's
God,
like,
no. He's like, give me a save situation,
pitch me
or I'm not playing.
In a save situation, I'm not coming in the seventh. I'm not coming in the eighth. And you're right. I mean, credit to Chapman. Noted good guy. Aroldis Chapman.
And you know what's also interesting? There's been a real turn in this.
That, by the way, was a connect. If you heard a little crowd reaction, that was a connection made to Diggs out in the right flat.
Garrett Whitlock only pitching one inning that's been the much more recent trend. Earlier in the year, it was a lot of two-inning performances from him.
I'll be consistent on this. I was like, why are you bringing Whitlock out for all these second innings? He's getting blown away.
I think they've sort of limited him, and he's actually been better.
He's been great.
Yeah.
They had limited Chapman. I don't know that Chapman had gotten up and down, like come out for the last out of an inning and then come back out. I don't know if that's true or not. He hadn't gotten more than three outs until last night. So anyway, I didn't mind bringing him in for Schwarber in the seventh. I wasn't even sure they were going to bring him back out for Harper to start the eighth. That was Diggs again, by the way, opposite side of the field. So May looking his way again.
Smart.
In these team drills. I didn't know they were going to bring him back out for Harper. I would have. I was surprised they stuck with Chapman against the righties after that.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think it's like super egregious asking Chapman to get four outs in that spot to bridge the gap to the ninth. I just thought you brought in Chapman for the lefties. I thought they would go to maybe Weissert for two outs against righties and then Whitlock, or maybe Whitlock for two outs and then you ask Weissert to get the save. I wasn't really sure how they'd do it.
I know.
I was surprised, A, they brought Chapman back out for the eighth. I didn't hate it. I was surprised he stayed in after Harper.
Yeah, I would. I mean,
because he hasn't gotten more than three outs all year. They haven't asked him to do that.
No, but he's also a difficult guy, I think, to take out. Like, I would have been like,
oh, yeah. And you know what I'm saying? I'm not telling you I saw that home run coming. Like, that shocked me when Real Muto hit that.
No, but I give Cora credit for the aggressiveness of putting him in there. And then once he gets those tough lefties, he is kind of rolling, and he's nasty. And it wasn't like it was a lot of pitches to get there. You're right. He doesn't get more than three outs. He usually doesn't. And whether that's him pitching in the eighth or not.
He hadn't this year.
Right. That's the first time. No, you're right. It's the first time. But I'm like, the guy's kind of rolling. I get it. You know, it's hard. He's been so good this year that I'd probably leave him. And then you're now saying, all right, now we have Whitlock in for the save. Now Whitlock can come in, just pitch the ninth and get the save. Obviously, that wasn't how it went out. And then you have Weissert in the 10th, and you're like on the edge of your seat. You're like, all right, he's going to give this up at any second. But no, they were super aggressive. They came up with some clutch hits as well. They actually put some runs on the board, which was great to see. And no, desperate times, but they needed that game. And they still go, you know, 2-4 on the road trip to start. But the way they ended each one of these series gives you like a little bit of hope, I guess.
We had our first sloppy play out of the first team offense. That was a fumbled exchange. Drake May and I'm guessing Bradbury. I'm trying to just see if Bradbury's standing with the rest of that group over there, 65.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing that was a fumbled exchange. It was definitely May. And I think that's Bradbury out there. So keep our tabs on that here today. We didn't see a lot of that. I mean, one near turnover from May yesterday.
Yeah.
The floated ball to Peppers that he dropped. And then you get the fumbled exchange there. So that was the Red Sox that win last night. I mean, I do give Narvaez a lot of credit. He had a brutal weekend.
Yeah.
The Red Sox, by the way, not on their P's and Q's again last night. You like Rob Refsnyder losing track of the outs?
No, I don't care for that.
There were three outs. He caught the final out of the inning in left field, and then he's just like all out, put his whole body into a throw home. No one's there to catch it. No one's there to do anything. It was already the third out of the inning. He lost track of the outs.
No, but he was like, if there were two outs, this is one out. This is what I'm doing.
I mean, I don't even know where.
Great heads up.
The throw was uncorked to the on deck circle.
Hosed it.
So like a terrible throw
would have had him.
He lost track of the outs. Like that was a mess in that game.
Hey Rob, what are you doing?
There was also Trevor Story. This is probably underplayed, but Trevor Story has a nice catch on the sideline. Who was that? Is that Pop?
That might have been a little popsicle.
I think that was Pop Douglas with the second team offense. That was Dobbs who threw that one, but that was a nice catch.
Yeah.
Far side sideline by Dobbs.
Dobbs is due.
I mean,
Dobbs
he is
due for
after yesterday. By Douglas, rather.
Yep.
Had that catch. But no, Trevor Story, underrated, in extra innings, ran into an out.
Yeah.
Now, what was that? Was that the ninth? I'm trying to remember now. But he ran into an out when he was on base. I think it was the 10th inning. He ran into an out at third base where the Red Sox were trying to tack on more. So, poor base running, losing track of outs.
Yeah, no, that was 10th. That was the 10th inning when that happened. They had already scored the one. He actually had the double to score Duran.
He was standing at second, and then, right, next thing you know, he's getting cut down on a brain-dead play at third. So, the Red Sox still had plenty of that. They take one out of three from Philly. They take one out of three from the Cubs. I'm not telling you it's great, Keith, but I feel like that's the bare minimum they had to do. They couldn't have got swept in either of these series.
Yeah, it almost feels like when you're watching all these games or listening to all these games, it almost felt like they got swept, but then they were able to come up because they lost the first two games of these series, and you're like, oh, it's pretty ugly. You know, but then they were able to salvage the series. Not ideal, right? You're looking for them to stack series win, especially leading into the trade deadline, kind of force their hand, make sure that they add to this team. And the Phillies and Cubs are good, and the Phillies and Cubs have good starting pitching, and those guys were able to kind of hold them down. Now, one kind of positive, I guess you could say, about another good team that they're about to face starting tomorrow is back home against the Dodgers. You're really not facing great pitching.
Oh, I was just going to look that up. Well, the Dodgers aren't playing well. Are the matchups bad? I was actually just about to look that up.
The matchups are in the favor of the Red Sox, I would say.
Well, it's not. You told me this late in the show. Ohtani's now not pitching on Sunday.
Ohtani's not. And the guy that usually pitches after Ohtani or has, I think, is just going to get the start.
Oh, yeah. So Dustin May's pitching on Sunday. It's Sheehan.
Yeah, he stinks.
Tomorrow night. And then it's Crochet Kershaw on Saturday night.
Which is a great matchup on paper. I don't think Kershaw's Kershaw, though. Like he got like an all-star nod because it's like he's an old dude and this is his last season.
4-1, 327.
Oh, that's better than I thought. How many starts
only,
is he had?
Only 11.
Okay.
55 innings.
Okay, so, I mean, you're right. Kershaw's solid, but the Red Sox do have a good lineup against left-handers. So I would say they have the advantage, clearly, in that game with Crochet. And then the other two games, the way Walker Buehler's pitching, I know you don't want to like bet the house on it, but he's going up against his former team. He has the advantage there. And then we'll see what Brian Baio does on Friday. So, but I'm also like for the hitters, you know, they get mowed down by Sanchez. They get mowed down by Wheeler for the most part. I feel like they got a much better chance in this series coming up.
Me too. And it's nice to know in both these wins, the game Sunday against the Cubs and the game last night. I mean, those are games where you felt dead and lifeless.
Yeah,
and
the
offense wasn't doing anything. You know, the game against the Cubs, the big hits were Abreu and Bregman. Yesterday, you got the big hit out of Romy Gonzalez.
Also, being down 5-0, it's not just that you were down 0-2 in the series, but you're down 5-0 in the game, and it's like, all right, we're kind of done here.
Did you see the stat they were flashing? It was like 66, 67 straight games the Phillies hadn't lost when they led 5-0, something like that, maybe at home.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
And the Red Sox were able to break through. So it took them a while to do it.
Uh-huh.
It was a roller coaster if you were watching. It wasn't perfect from the Red Sox, but they did enough to get a victory, which wasn't feeling like something they were going to get done.
No.
We got Brad Foe coming your way at 11:30. He joins us every Thursday on Jones and Keefe. We're live at Patriots training camp for day two here at Gillette Stadium. We're brought to you by McFarland Energy. Sam Kennedy was on the Greg Hill show today.
Front office report.
Front office report every week, Thursdays at 9.
Yep.
Let's start with, if we can, Nick, go in order here with the way the interview progressed. Sam Kennedy was asked about the biggest needs at the deadline. He kind of echoed Alex Cora yesterday on WEEI Afternoons. This is what Sam Kennedy thinks the Red Sox need at this trade deadline.
You can never have enough pitching. I mean, I've just been in this for so long. Usually the team with the most lockdown bullpen, team with a great rotation, are teams that are built to go deep in the postseason. That said, I can tell you there's a lot of outbound phone calls being made down the hall in baseball operations, looking at ways to upgrade our defense at certain positions, catcher, first base, right-handed, left-handed. I mean, we're looking, trying to uncover all opportunities to improve this team. That said, when you've got 20, 21 teams at this point trying to do the same, it's challenging. So my guess is it'll come right down to the end as it usually does.
Okay, so I hate the end of that answer. It's going to come down to the
end. There's a lot in there, actually.
A lot of teams have a lot of needs, which goes back to the Passan report yesterday that, oh, well, the Red Sox are an efficient organization and this is not an efficient time of year. I hate the end of the answer, but a few things to glean earlier in the answer.
Yeah, so a couple things jumped out to me. So he does say pitching, and you're like, hey, you need pitching. But then the first part of that he mentions is teams win with a lockdown bullpen.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay. And I mean, he mentions all this. He mentions starters. He mentions righty-lefties. We get into the rest of the answer. But the first specific thing he mentions,
lockdown bullpen,
is a lockdown bullpen, which, listen, that'd be great. I would like the team to be better in all regards. I still think starting pitching and a bat are more important needs than bullpen. And it makes you just wonder, the conversations he has had with Craig Breslow, he also points out Breslow's been doing a lot of calling out, which also makes me feel, we can't give him credit because they haven't made any moves yet, but it makes me feel better that this slow start in the second half hasn't changed the conversation. Like,
right,
they're still very much making calls. They want all these things.
Well, if they're paying any attention to the way Giolito's pitched,
yeah,
which was awful again. Like, we haven't even said that, but awful again last night.
Home run ball.
And like, I'm not telling you the guy sucks. He's been pretty good, but you can't rely on him as a 2 or a 3. Same thing with Brian Baio, who pitches on tomorrow night, against the Dodgers.
But doesn't it make you feel like the conversations he has had with Breslow would point to a lot of relief pitching if his first thing he says is teams that win have a lockdown bullpen?
I think it's totally fair. Yeah. I think that's totally fair to say the first thing he highlighted was lockdown bullpen. Did you notice what he highlighted when he got to the bats, or as he put it, the defensive alignment?
Catcher, first base.
Catcher before he said first base.
So catcher? So I know it was a wonky couple of games for Carlos Narvaez with the catcher's interference and stuff. But he's been one of the better defensive catchers in baseball.
Correct. This is why
ask Nick.
It's got to be a Connor Wong upgrade. They need a backup.
This is also what I think. I think you bring in another catcher in case.
I know.
You hedge against Narvaez. No, so it wouldn't be top of my list either, but I think they could use one.
They definitely could. Connor Wong shouldn't be playing. Connor Wong has had a horrible season.
But he also
plays anyway.
Right, but you also might need to hedge against Narvaez dropping off because he hasn't been as good.
Okay.
In the last few home run aside last night, the offense has dropped off. It was a huge home run, but the offense has dropped off, and he had a rough defensive series. So I think it's a double where you hedge against a drop off from Narvaez and you upgrade your backup.
But that's also sort of setting up for what would be a really disappointing deadline.
Correct.
Which is 1 week from today, and we all want a starting pitcher and a bat. And if they turn it around and get a backup catcher and a reliever,
that would suck.
But that's what it sounds like.
That's what it sounds like. So, look, those things can be on the list. I'll take a reliever.
First baseman? Yes, please.
I'll take a catcher. But what I want, maybe even more than a starting pitcher these days, is a big right-handed bat that can play first base. That's what I want.
You want a bullpen arm?
And they're like,
a guy that plays over Connor Wong?
Let's give you a guy who plays once a week on Bayo's starts. He's his personal catcher. Like, no, I don't want that.
A Doug Mirabelli type. And a relief pitcher like they got last year with Lucas Sibbs and whatever it was. The guys that just poured gasoline on themselves.
What was the other?
Garcia?
Is that what it was?
Yeah, Luis Garcia.
Luis Garcia and Lucas Sibbs. Horrible.
Yeah, Danny Jansen was your right-handed
horrible
back catcher. So, like, if you do that again, trust me. Brez Pro, as bullish as they come.
I know.
Craig Breslow. But I told you.
He has 1 week to either keep you on his side or to turn you against him.
The trade deadline for him is massive because it was so bad last year.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the other baseball moves he's made are pretty good.
No, he had a great offseason, and that's nice.
And
now you have to build off of that.
I think even look to last year's offseason. He wasn't allowed to do much, Keith. But I think even look at it, it's like Roman Gonzalez can play.
Yeah.
Like Giolito has worked out. The extensions for Rafaela and Bayo.
Yeah, I mean Giolito's been all right.
Okay, but he didn't
pitch last year.
No, but he's been good. But he's impacting the team this year.
No, he's been better than not.
He knew he wasn't going to pitch last year.
He impacted the team for a month.
Okay, what is he at? I'm looking at what are his actual stats right now, even after the last two crappy ones.
Yeah, what are his stats for the season? I would say his ERA is 3.97.
Yeah, that's good.
No, I'll take this. Well, it's fine.
But I'm saying. His deadline is what really...
He gave up 4 home runs yesterday.
And that wasn't good. His deadline is really what's awful, though. You know what I mean? Like, the other stuff doesn't even, in retrospect, look that awful. His offseason last year didn't look that awful.
I'm with you. He's built a solid team. The trade deadline left a little something to be desired. However, I do feel like, and Sam kind of reiterated it again today, I think Breslow and Sam have talked differently about this team than they did last year's team. Even though as our guy Terp with the stat of the week, same record through 100 games, it just still feels different. Sam Kennedy was asked about it today. He even brought up Crochet. He went through a lot of the same reasons that we went through as to why the team, despite the record being pretty much identical, it feels better. And therefore, last year they were kind of like, "Hey, we're kind of playing with house money," meaning like this team shouldn't be as good as it is. Let's make some moves so we can show the fan base and Alex Cora that we made a few moves. But it was all dumps. It was all guys that were useless guys.
Yep.
But they made moves. This year, you're not going to get by with that. You're not going to get celebrated for Danny Jansen and James Paxton. Like, now the expectation is way, way higher.
And it should be.
And it absolutely should be.
It should be. They're sitting there again, tied for the second wild card with a big win last night. I know we're running a little late, Nick. Let me just hear the other answer from Sam Kennedy this morning. He was asked directly about the Jeff Passan report from yesterday. Here's his response.
Yeah, we're looking to improve, Chris, and Passan and Alex and all these guys talked to lots of different people. I'm not sure where those reports specifically come from, because I can tell you there's been going all the way back to December, January, February, there's been an urgency around this organization to – be as competitive as possible in 2025, and really excited about the group that we have. So there's a lot of activity in terms of preparing the fan base for what may happen. It would be foolish to try and predict here, because when you get into the trade deadline, emotions run high across all of baseball, and players who may not be available today may be available just 4 or 5 days from now. So not really sure the direction it's going to go. We'll just continue to monitor all opportunities and see what might be available as we get closer to the 31st.
Okay, so he got away from the promises he made early there. The promise early was we're going to have urgency. We want to be as competitive as possible in 2025.
But now it's emotional time.
So I'm going to hold him to that. Yeah. I'm going to hold him to that. I'm going to hold Breslow to that. They better do what they can to be as competitive as they can be in 2025 and show urgency. Those are his words. We're going to hold him to that.
You know what I was thinking watching the game last night, or really this whole series, is, you know, as you're watching Kyle Schwarber, Sock Dingers, and Dave Dombrowski put this team together, you're like, all right, here's this Phillies team, which is really, really good. Feels like they could go on a run. They're for sure going to get one of the five biggest trade targets. They're for sure going to add somebody. They're going to get like Suarez, or they're going to get somebody big and add to their team, which really has probably less needs than a lot of the other top contending teams. But they're still going to be aggressive. You can see it coming.
Did you hear them mention last night on the broadcast the Phillies might move Castellanos?
No, I missed that.
I mean, I wonder if that's a righty bat that the Red Sox could get in on. And that, I know he's more outfielder
these
days.
Well, if any major life event happens, you know he's going to sock a dinger. So there is that.
It's true. Yeah. But
you hear what Marloni called him the other day?
No.
The worst defensive outfielder in baseball.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I wouldn't blame him in the outfield, but as a right-handed bat at DH, that might be useful.
He's sitting there and he like fielded a ball.
Left field by Castellanos. It will be a home run. And so that'll make it a 4-0 ball game.
He like fielded it. I don't know if it was it might have been Roman Anthony's double off a Wheeler or something. And then Lou just like with a drive by, he's like, he's the worst defensive outfielder in baseball.
I didn't catch.
I was like, oh, okay,
nice. Well, thanks for letting us know, Lou. 617-779-7937. Eyes on day two, Patriots training camp. Jones and Keefe here at Gillette, as we will be all week and in the next week for Pats training camp, even beyond. We'll continue with all your feedback coming up. Kiefer Madness at 12:45 every Thursday. We talk to Rob Bradford. WEEI and baseball isn't boring. He joins us right after Trending with Billy Landy.
Now. Jones and Keefe on WEEI.
And streaming on WEEI.com.
I mean, there's always room for improvement, position player-wise and pitching-wise. You know, I think that at the end, pitching is the most important thing in this game. You know, if you pitch consistently on a daily basis, you got a shot to win. You look at the Brewers, you look at the Rays, what they're doing, right, with their lineups and, you know, their record. So, you know, if I have to choose, you know, always add from to the pitching part of it, and offensively we can do our thing.
That was Alex Cora yesterday on WEEI Afternoons. He was still in a good mood prior to the game.
Yeah. What happened?
Red Sox win last night. He was a little bit on edge after the game last night. We'll get to that coming up in just a moment. It's Jones and Keefe live at Patriots training camp, day two here at Gillette Stadium. Couple of notes to pass along quick. Drake May starting off 10 out of 10 in team drills.
Oof, hot as a pistol.
Although a lot of the throws were short, as we saw, screen swing passes. 5 of those, according to Callahan, were short. He also had the fumbled exchange. I said I thought it was with Bradbury. Wrong. It's with the rookie Jared Wilson at center. A couple of completions in there to Steph Diggs. The only other note, and I missed this in real time. It was right after the catch we highlighted from Pop Douglas, and we were watching kind of the aftermath of that down the field. I guess shortly after that, right after that, we also had Kyle Williams' first drop of training camp. So you giveth and you take. Good
right.
day yesterday.
The ups and downs of being a rookie.
The dropsies today.
That's all right.
We'll continue to pass along updates from Patriots training camp here today on Jones and Keefe. We're brought to you by McFarlane Energy here at Patriots training camp, as is our next guest, Rob Bradford, WEEI, and the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast, brought to you by McFarlane Energy, the heating, cooling, and bioheat delivery pros that Eastern Mass and all of Cape Cod depend on at McFarlaneEnergy.com. Rob Bradford, McFarlane to you.
Oh, McFarlane, my friend. There is nothing. I need McFarlane more than ever, the vibes, because I am taking that six-hour drive from Philadelphia. I am currently calling you from the Grover Cleveland rest stop, which every time I think of rest stops and Popeye's chicken, I think of Grover Cleveland. So, what a time to be alive. And by the way, you guys are doing such an outstanding job. Thank you
for
getting me through this trip.
Yeah.
And I never think of like bobbing and weaving your way through observing something that's going on in front of you while doing a show. Like, I remember doing the Red Sox alumni game, and we were doing it from the press box. So we're trying to do the show, and then, oh, wait a second. Julio Lugo just went deep off Pedro Martinez. So, yeah, I feel your pain, yeah.
Those are good updates, Rob. Jones mentioned how Alex Cora in the postgame wasn't in the best mood for a guy that had just won a game. Did you read anything into that?
That's a tough one, you know, and I definitely noticed that after the game. And a lot of times, you know, Cora sort of will zig when everyone thinks he's going to zag when it comes to sort of games like this. But I think some of the questions were, you know, you have like, oh, well, you have like, hey, you know, this is this the turning point of the season, which is, you know, Cora's not going to take that bait. I mean, Cora's not going to say that. And also, I think that another thing that Cora isn't a big fan of is that hey, you know, how you hung with the big boys sort of conversation, because I think that he perceives this team as being already with the big boys. I mean, those are just a couple guesses, but, you know, the vibe in the manager's office after the game was completely different when we walked out into the clubhouse, and then you had everybody saying this was a definitive game. This was a game that will, you know, could be the launching point for bigger things. And this was felt like a playoff game and everything else like that. But you didn't get that from Cora, no.
Okay, interesting. I'm watching the field here, Rob. As you mentioned, we're kind of juggling stuff, watching training camp. Kyle Williams, not only a drop on the field, Keith, just dropped a punt as well.
Yeah, all right. Well,
so those hands look a little iffy.
Maybe don't have them back there for punts.
On day two, we'll continue to monitor. With the Red Sox last night, I was a little discouraged listening to Sam Kennedy today. I was discouraged by the Jeff Passan report the other day. Just the general tone of what the Red Sox may do at the deadline, Rob. Did they do enough to really invest by taking one out of three, avoiding a sweep against the Cubs and Phillies? Have they done enough to truly invest in this team at the deadline, or should we start tempering expectations?
No, I think this has nothing to do with what their plan was. Like, honestly, they could have lost last night, and I think it would have stayed the same. I think that a lot of people, a lot of reporters are doing everything they can, but there's been a lot of generalities when it comes to, especially with the Red Sox. I'll stay with this, with my tone, which is I think they're more motivated than ever to do something at a deadline, more so certainly than in the last few years, because let's go back to thou who shall not be named, the Devers deal. I mean, when you push your chips to the middle of the table, you push your chips to the middle of the table. Like Kennedy said back in January, he said going back to January and February and March, the motivation of this organization to be good in 2025, I think this has led them to be more motivated to do something at the deadline, whether they won or not last night. And I think Cora brought up a good point before the game, which was, yeah, listen, like, you haven't won as many games, but the standings are basically the same. So if the standings are the same, you are right now, as we sit here, a playoff team, then of course you're going to be a buyer. And even if you weren't, even if you were two or three games out, because of what has happened leading up to this, I do still think that they are going to be aggressive. And now it's going to get uncomfortable, but they are going to be aggressive.
How would you prioritize starting pitcher, relief pitcher, bat?
Oh, starting pitcher, yeah. I mean, I think the same thing that they think. But like as we said before, let's say last week, good luck with that. You know, this is, you know, the Joe Ryan thing a week ago, everyone was talking about Joe Ryan, and, you know, Joe Ryan was psyched for the trade deadline. Well, I'd be shocked if Joe Ryan got dealt. And that leads you to a bunch of the Reynolds. And I heard you guys talking about Charlie Morton. And, you know, I think Charlie Morton is sort of like a name that is just, I don't think, put it this way, if they got Charlie Morton, I would have a hard time believing that would be the only pitcher that they've got. So the name that has come up recently that's interesting to me is Dylan Cease. Dylan Cease, you remember, 2 years ago was the be-all, end-all at the trade deadline. His ERA hasn't been great this year. But if you look at it, it's really been, you know, a four-start stretch that hasn't been good. The last couple have been pretty good. And, you know, and I like Dylan Cease. Like, if you said to me you got Dylan Cease on a rental, that's an upgrade. That's a guy we all said, you got to get a guy who can pitch in the playoffs. I would have no problem throwing Dylan Cease out in a playoff game. But there's a bunch of guys. There's a long list of these guys. And so I think that starting pitching number one, and then the relief pitching, you know, to help with what's going on in the back of the bullpen is number two.
On Dylan Cease, and Heyman reported that the Yankees, Mets, Cubs, and Red Sox are among the teams believed to be checking in on Dylan Cease. Like, what's he going to cost you? Is that going to cost you Duran?
I don't know if it would cost you Duran, but, you know, that would be, to be honest with you, from the Red Sox perspective, for a rental,
Padres love Duran. That's the only reason I asked. We know the Padres love Duran.
Yeah. I mean, we all know this, right? And I think maybe that's what they're asking for. But again, you're trading for a rental who has a, you know, I can say all these nice things about Dylan Cease and that he writes a mean poem, but it's, you know, he has a 4.5 ERA. And so is that what you want? If you want to upturn the clubhouse for Jaron Duran for that, or can you get another avenue of another rental that's going to cost a little bit less? I don't know, like, if San Diego's saying, hey, you know what, we're going to get Jaron Duran. We want for Dylan Cease. All I'm saying is that, you know, for the Red Sox, Dylan Cease makes sense. I don't know if it makes sense for Jaron Duran straight up.
You know, you talk about getting uncomfortable at the trade deadline, and, you know, right now you'd have to, I guess, overpay, right, for somebody like Joe Ryan. But should this team be looking at it a little bit differently, considering so many of their players at the major league level are young and under team control for a long time? This isn't a team that has a bunch of old guys, and then if you trade your minor leaguers, then you're going to be in this weird time for, you know, a few seasons until you build it back up. To me, it seems like a no-brainer to even overpay. I wouldn't say gut the farm system, but damn near close gut the farm system, because most of your starting players are in their 20s.
It's a good point, and I would have no problem trading any minor leaguer in their system right now. None. And we couldn't say that before, right? We couldn't say that about Roman Anthony or you know, Marcelo Meyer, or, you know, back when Christian Campbell was a different player back then. We couldn't say that. But I would have no problem trading in just Nixon Garcia, or even like a guy Peyton Tolley, you know, who's a pitcher who they got in last year's draft. I would have no problem with that. And I think that, to your point, is that at some point you do deal these guys to win now. And we can't, let's not forget what this season is. I mean, let's not forget that we go back to the comment of Craig Breslow at the Devers deal. Like, we think that we can win more games this year than we could if we kept it status quo. And it had worked out for the large part throughout the most majority of July. But you have to keep that sort of going. You have to understand that this is 2025. This is the opportunity that you have. And, yeah, you have a lot of young players. And, right, I mean, so don't worry about it. So trade some of these guys, because you know what? At the end of the day, go down the list of minor leaguers who were traded the last two deadlines. There's not a whole lot to come back to hurt you. It's worth it if you want to make a run at things.
Well, that's certainly how we feel. We endorse that on Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. Rob Bradford joining us from Baseball Isn't Boring and WEEI.com. You can check out his podcast on the Odyssey app. What's the latest, I guess I would ask? Are there fears about Marcelo Meyer leaving that game early last night? How concerned should we be about that?
I would not have any concern, because this is the same wrist that he injured in 2022. And I know he was downplaying that. He said, I don't even remember what wrist it was. It was so long ago. But, you know, it was the same wrist. He was in I don't even know what you call it, a splint. It was just like a splint, which I don't know really how much to read into that. The fact that the plan is to get MRI tells you that it is something. And I think this, guys, is that, you know, when you have Marcelo Meyer go down, and I know that he hasn't played a lot against lefties and everything else, but he has proven himself to be a part of the solution here. Like, defensively at second base and filling in at third base while Bregman comes back, he is part of the solution. And if you don't have him, then I think what you have to do is move Rafaela back in the infield a whole lot more. I think it weakens the team. So I wouldn't be surprised for him to go on the injured list, but I think it would be a big, big hit if they lose him for any extended period of time.
Okay, he is Rob Bradford. You can check out All the latest on Twitter at Bradfo. You can listen to him again on the Odyssey app. Baseball Isn't Boring, AUDACY. Get it on your phone, free, easy. Take it with you wherever you go. You can also check that out on the iHeartRadio and TuneIn apps as well. Bradfo, excellent stuff as always. We'll talk to you, I guess, on deadline day next week, huh? A week from today.
Ooh, yeah. Mm-hmm. How about that? How
okay,
about
that? Good timing.
Be spicy. Yeah.
You can break news. Time. You can break news right here on Jones and Keefe next week.
Oh, listen, I have a bunch of news which I want to break right now. I'm going to make a save it for next show.
Good idea. Yeah. Put a pin in that.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you next week. Bradfo, thank you. As always, excellent stuff.
See you guys.
All right, Rob Bradford joining us here on Jones and Keefe. Speaking of breaking news, Keefe, we have significant news.
We do.
And it's sad. Hulk Hogan. It was Ozzy Osbourne earlier this week. Hulk Hogan has died at the age of 71, according to a number of reports out there, TMZ included. I was reading from their timeline.
Yeah.
They say they're told there was a slew of police cars and EMTs parked outside his home, and he was carried out on a stretcher into an ambulance. I guess, and I missed this at the time, but TMZ had a story last month where he was not doing well health-wise.
Yeah, he was doing pretty bad, I guess, was the last update. And so today you get news that Hulk Hogan, perhaps the most famous wrestler in the history of wrestling, has died at the age of 71. Yeah, we saw him out even on TV not that long ago. Remember, we were actually talking about it.
His beer, right?
You were like, All-American beer, brother. Yeah. He had the whole thing where he came out and he was doing some different podcasts and things, but WWE would still bring him out occasionally. And I think it was when they made their first Monday Night Raw on Netflix. So that might have been at the beginning of this year, Bill. Was that like January that we saw Hogan?
Right. Yeah, it sounds about right.
And, unreal. So, yeah, you had Malcolm Jamal Warner earlier this week.
Oh, jeez, I forgot about – right, Theo.
Theo Huxtable.
Ozzy Osbourne.
And Hulk Hogan.
And now Hulk Hogan.
Good
I mean, they say
Lord.
They say these things come in threes, but ay-yi-yi.
Yeah.
That is it's a rough week around these parts.
It's crazy. And whether you are a fan of his or not, he is the guy that really – broke through.
You've seen him live?
Hogan?
Yeah. Have you seen him live, Bill? You must have,
I have.
Right? I was going to say
you and must. I'll tell you, and this is insane, right, to even think this is possible. I'm going to throw a brag in here.
Okay. Yeah, do it.
So I was at the Celtics game when they came back
Sick
from 26.
Sick brag, bro.
We're bragging back, about deaths now.
Yeah, no, but they came back from 26 against the Nets, and the place was electric. Hulk Hogan came out to fight Randy Orton at SummerSlam.
Oh, you've never heard it like
I could
that.
Literally louder. Feel the building shake.
Right. Yeah.
I couldn't get over it because again, seeing like the Celtics do what they did in the playoffs.
I hear you.
Was
the wrestling crowd goes nuts there. At the
but
garden.
When this guy came out to fight Randy Orton, the building was literally shaking. It was insane.
Well, that's another guy. I watch a lot of Hogan Knows Best. Like that's another guy that I probably know more from reality TV. But right across
all that money from Gawker.
Oh yeah. Well, that a crossover superstar. About parlaying his fame from the wrestling world into Rocky movies and the big screen and reality TV and all this other stuff. And so, rough week, terrible news
around
these parts.
He's the reason we watch wrestling.
Yeah.
Oh, he
Whether
was,
you're a fan
he
of him or not, but he's why you got into it.
Oh, he was the face of it. And I've seen like 1,000 documentaries on like the WCW, WWF, Monday Night Wars and stuff. And he was at the center of that because he went from WWF to WCW, really put them on the map. His heel turn is the greatest heel turn of all time because he was the eat your or take your vitamins, drink your milk guy for the longest time. Then he became bad and he was Hollywood Hogan and it was awesome. And the NWO was the coolest thing in the late 90s. But yeah, he was the guy. What's crazy about him is he couldn't really wrestle, but he didn't have to.
He was more just you liked him because of the personality and the presence.
His personality, his look, the whole thing about him was nuts. And so yeah, it was either him or it was who he was wrestling against. But he was at the center of wrestling for, I don't know, a couple decades probably. And for the non-wrestling fans, they all knew who he was.
Yeah, like they go Hulk Hogan. Right, like, yeah, that's not like I was a big wrestling fan, but that's a name
throughout the 80s.
That rings out, yeah.
He even predates us a little bit. Like the height of his popularity was probably like, what do you think, Bill? Like mid 80s? Probably like WrestleMania 3.
WrestleMania 3 was 85, 86 maybe.
WrestleMania 3 was probably
mid to late 80s.
85, 86, 87. So yeah, but he's like fighting Andre the Giant. And then there's been a lot of guys that they try to, like, pass the torch to, but they never really could do it. Like Ultimate Warrior or, like.
Plus Hogan never wanted to.
He wouldn't let him.
He was very stubborn about how things were done.
And there's another whole story there where he had, like, creative control in WCW. And then that is just a mess. So it's like, you're going to lose tonight. No, I'm not. It's like, okay.
Okay.
Got to back to the drawing board.
Guess we'll rewrite that.
But it's like, again, like the pioneer of heavy metal. The pioneer of wrestling.
Yeah,
gone.
Seriously.
Like, it's nuts.
I know. It's crazy.
So, again, the news today, and this is in the last, not even
minute.
10 minutes.
Yeah, this is fresh.
Hulk Hogan, now dead at the age of 71. Patriots wrapping things up here at training camp day 2 at Gillette. Looks like they're going to wrap up with some conditioning, so we'll give you some thoughts, not only on the news that just went down. We can react to Bradfoe as well, but what's going on in front of us here at training camp on Jones and Keefe, WEEI.
No matter where you work from these days,
take Jones and Keefe with you on the Odyssey app.
Favorite WEEI.
We were just talking about this in the last break, Keefe, but it is it's like childhood's lost out there for a lot of people.
It's really crazy.
With the news earlier this hour, just the last 15 minutes or so, Hulk Hogan at age 71 has now passed away. That's on the heels of Ozzy earlier this week, and I'd forgotten already. Yeah. Shame on me. Malcolm Jamal Warner as well.
Yeah, think about the time as a kid that I spent watching The Cosby Show or wrestling, and then probably as like a teenager listening to like Black Sabbath and Ozzy, and like all that in a week is gone. Pretty wild. Yeah, I mean, Hulk Hogan was wrestling for the longest time.
Right. Like if you ask me, I'm not a wrestling guy.
Yeah,
if you
ask
me to name a wrestler, that's the first one I'd come up.
100%.
Like, not even close.
Any Mount Rushmore or Top Five Friday wrestlers would have Hogan in there. And then you could argue like, well, was he good like actual wrestler?
Was he on your top five? I mean, not to urinate on anyone's grave, but was he a top five American on your list? Did he make the cut? Just off?
Oh, is he on yours?
First omission?
You know what?
He wasn't on mine.
No, I ended up going with Kurt Angle because he was also in the Olympics, a true real American, and kind of, but Hogan would be considered
a posthumous recognition.
Yeah, sixth.
Yeah, he was right off the list, yeah.
Top honorable mention would be Hulk Hogan. But no, I mean, his career and impact on wrestling kind of like spanned decades. And then he even had like that run late in his career where he had WrestleMania match against The Rock, for God's sake, sort of like bridge that gap. I would say those are probably the two most famous wrestlers of all time because they also crossed over into movies.
Yeah,
you know,
it's true.
You know, Hulk Hogan and Rocky III, for God's sake.
I wonder who I would name Hogan. I would definitely name first. Maybe The Rock second. But you're right. There's not for me a ton of those guys that I just like name quickly.
Cena for the fans now, like a younger generation, and now that he's also in a lot of movies, I think like those are probably the most mainstream guys. You know, and Stone Cold Steve Austin burned really hot. I think people would mention him. But no, I mean, Hulk Hogan was in a sort of a different class than everybody else.
So that's, again, sad news in a sad week around these parts. Hulk Hogan at age 71, again, the news from TMZ, among others, has passed away. We're here at Patriots training camp, day 2, Jones and Keefe at Gillette Stadium. You heard the crowd reacting there. They're wrapping up. They're kind of breaking down right now after doing some cool down team stretching sort of thing. Team conditioning at the end of practice, I should say. Mike Reese put a bow on the practice, and I would agree with this characterization. You tell me if you agree. Reese said initial thought after second practice, this was a get the ball out quick, take the profit day for quarterback Drake May. I think it's a nice way of saying May was under a lot of pressure again today.
Yeah.
Probably not too exciting for those in attendance, but part of May's game that could be critical to lowering the INT count. He also notes, shout out Dice, third-string quarterback Ben Woolridge showing up at practice today.
Opportunity to be the backup.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, the Dobbs looked better today. He looked terrible yesterday.
Yeah, he did.
I wouldn't say he like stood out in any way today. But sticking with the May piece to that, Keefe, I would agree with that. There was a lot of he doesn't have any time, so he's going to get that ball out quick. You saw it on his first throw to Booty. You saw it on a couple of throws to Steph Diggs.
Yeah.
You saw it on dump-offs to the running backs. There was one to Henderson that May dumped off. So there was not a lot of time for him to throw. I don't know if that was by design or not, but it didn't look like it to me.
No, I don't love that. You know, and I think Steph Diggs can be a guy that maybe you can work some of the short passes with. I think, you know, the running backs are all going to have to be able to catch a lot of passes this year. But, you know, somebody like Kyle Williams, like if you're looking to try to get him downfield more, like how many opportunities will there be? We knew the offensive line wasn't a strength going in 2 days through camp, and you know, neither of these practices have been full pads. Today they're just in helmets, so you can, you know, if you want to grade it a little bit or take it with a grain of salt, then I guess fine. But we knew that was going to be a little bit of an issue. How's the offensive line going to look? The Patriots' defensive line, I would say, is solid, but it's not like some of the ones you're going to be facing.
Right,
right?
Correct.
You're not going up against all pros.
There's no Max Crosby. There's no T.J. Watt.
No. So it's not that. So they need to be a little bit better than that. But, you know, it's funny because Drake May last year, even in his rookie year, he did throw a lot of short passes. He had a really high completion percentage,
yep,
which is always misleading if guys are throwing the ball at or around the line of scrimmage. You would like to see this year the ability to get it more downfield, and you hope that you have receivers that can do it, but sort of within that conversation is, do you have an offensive line that even allows you to do it?
Well, it's fair. So the numbers rolling in, we'll be sure to pass those along for complete takeaways from practice, but May was 14 out of 15. He did have a batted ball at the end of practice. He also had a fumbled exchange with Jared Wilson, but still no picks through two games. I would say today, again, probably even less reading into those numbers than yesterday. But we'll continue to pass along everything from day two today at Patriots training camp. Jones and Keefe live here today again.